Good morning. Today's Daf and Shabbos is Samech. We are beginning this morning on the bottom of Nun Tes Amud Beis. We are going to be starting with the Gemara. V'lo b'taba she'in ala chosam. A ring that does not have a signet on it. Our first discussion this morning is going to revolve around rings in terms of Kabbalah Satoma. And in terms of a woman being able to wear them on Shabbos. We are now well into the sixth parak of the Masechta of Shabbos, and we are discussing the jewelry that a woman cannot go out with on Shabbos. Jewelry is a tachshit, as we discussed already since the beginning of this parak. As a tachshit, it's just simply part and parcel of the clothing. You're obviously allowed to wear clothing on Shabbos into a Rishos HaRabim. That is kind of self-evident. And jewelry being a tachshit, being also considered part of clothing, also could be worn out into the Rishos HaRabim. However, the Chachamim said that there are certain articles of jewelry which a woman would be tempted to take off while walking in the Rishos HaRabim, and as a result of that, a woman cannot go out with particular articles of clothing. Tosos, in the beginning of the parak, which I've gone over numerous times, and I feel comfortable going over it again, and it is really fundamental to the entire parak. Tosos, in the beginning of the parak, says that there are three reasons that a woman may take off these articles of jewelry while in the Rishos HaRabim. And so the Chachamim took these three different considerations. One, says Tosfos, is that she wants to show it off to her friend. So that means it has to be a small article of jewelry. If it's something larger in nature and it's difficult for her to take off, yesterday we just gave an example like earrings. Rashi describes how earrings are hard to take off based on the way they dress back in the day. Earrings were just simply difficult to take off. So if it's something that's comfortable for her to take off because she wants to show it off to a friend, that's one reason why a woman would take off jewelry while in the Rishos HaRabim. Two is that maybe she has to tov on the mikvah. And so therefore there is a chatzitza consideration where she's going to need to take it off before going into the mikvah. We discussed that at length when we were discussing the ribbons that were twined into her hair. And then a third consideration is kpeda, where a person is going to be uncomfortable wearing that article of clothing or that jewelry out in the Rishos HaRabim and be tempted to take it off. Now, we haven't really given a good example of that, but that's coming up later in the parak. So for these three considerations, the Chachamim banned the wearing of certain jewelry in the Rishos HaRabim. And what we've been doing since the beginning of the parak is just listing off the items and explaining why each of these items are items that cannot be worn into a Rishos HaRabim. And now we're discussing rings, the tabas. Now, rings are coming in one of two different types. One does not have a signet on it. The other one does have a signet on it. When we discuss a signet, we're basically talking about some sort of impression that is fixed into the ring. And basically, it was for the purposes of business. If I wanted to sign a document, notarize a document, seal something, and put a specific impression on the seal, so the signet ring was perfect. That was a type of instrument that was used in terms of sealing documents. Obviously, a ring that does not have a signet on it is just simply ornamental in nature. The Mishnah taught us that a woman cannot go out with a tabas she'ein ala chosam, that if it does not have a signet on it, meaning that it's simply ornamental in nature, a woman cannot go out with it on Shabbos. And here, I think it's fair to suggest that the reason is that the ring is something that she's going to want to take off and show to her friend, and the concern of the Chachamim is that she's going to want to carry it four amas in a Rishos HaRabim. With all that stated, let's go right into the Gemara on Nun Tes Amud Beis. Hayesh ala chosam chayeves. Now, the impression you get from the Mishnah, the implication is that if it has a signet on it, and she were to carry it out into Rishos HaRabim, or let's say it's stronger, if she were to wear it in a Rishos HaRabim, she'd be chayev. Meaning that would be considered carrying. Amalav tachshidhu. Which means that a ring with a signet on it is not a tachshit, and by virtue of that, it's going to be considered carrying. Uriminu, the other Gemara says, now, in of itself, that's easy to understand, as we just got done explaining. The ring with the signet on it, it was used more for business than it was for pleasure. And so therefore, this is not really a tachshit, and if it's not a tachshit, it's a masui. It's something now, it's a burden that you're carrying. So in that regard, we understand. On the other hand, we're going to now learn a Mishnah in Kalim in the 11th parak of Kalim. Urimenu tachshit enashim tameim, that when it comes to jewelry worn by a woman, it is susceptible to tumah. Ve'elein tachshit enashim, the Mishnah continues. And the list of tachshit enashim are katlaos, chokers, which actually we discussed pretty recently in this parak, nizamim, We're talking here about rings. As will become evident in the Mishnah, this is talking about earrings. Now, I know our Mishnah, when it described Nezamim, was talking about nose rings, but you'll see why. Right now, we know we're talking about earrings. Vitabaos, and we're talking also about standard rings that are worn on the finger. Vitabas, bein sheyesh ala achosam, bein sheein ala achosam. And the Mishnah in Kalim says it does not matter whether the ring had a signet on it or it did not have a signet on it. And also nizme'af, and also rings worn in the nose rings. Okay, so all these are different types of rings, which are mekabel tuma. And so what we seem to have over here is a very simple stira between our Mishnah in Shabbos and the Mishnah in Kalim. Our Mishnah here in the sixth parak of Shabbos taught us that a woman with a signet ring is not considered tachshit. It's not considered jewelry. And therefore, if she goes out with it on Shabbos, she's going to be chayiv. The Mishnah in Kalim, while enumerating the Kalim that are susceptible to tuma, so the Mishnah goes over both types of rings, a ring with a signet and a ring without a signet. And what we seem to have over here is a stira. The Gemara is going to answer the stira in one of three different ways. One, Amar Rebbe Zera Lo Kasha Ha Reb Nechemya Ha Rabbanan. So the first way to resolve the stira is that really what it's reflecting is a machlokes hatanayim. The Tanya in the Gemara quotes the following braisa. He shamateches vechosmasha amog temeya. We're talking now about a ring that's made up of two different materials. The ring itself is made out of one material, and the insignia, the signet on the ring, is made up of a different material. Now, as we've gone over numerous times throughout Shas, when something is made out of metal, it does not have to have a toch, it does not have to have a container. A metal instrument, a needle, which actually we're going to be discussing later this morning, a needle, if made out of metal, is mekabel tuma. When it comes to wood, however, wood has to have a toch. It has to have an inside, a cup, a spoon. But if a wood instrument does not have a toch, it's not mekabel tuma. So this is the basic distinction between metal and wood. And now we're describing a ring. Now, the ring here in this particular situation is made up of wood and metal. And if the ring is made up of metal, and the chosam and the signet itself is made up of wood, it is going to be mekabel tuma. Why? Because very simple. Because it's essentially metal. However, he sha'amog b'chosmasha mateches, tahora. If let's say the ring itself is made out of wood, it happens to be that the seal, the insignia that's attached to the ring is made out of metal, so it's not mekabel tuma. Why? Because even though a component of the ring is made out of metal, but the ring itself is made out of wood, and therefore it's not mekabel tuma. Good. That's the opinion of the Tanna Kamma. Reb Nechemya disagrees. Reb Nechemya mitame. Reb Nechemya says that such a ring, in fact, would be mekabel tuma. And as we're going to see in just a moment, according to Reb Nechemya, what is the consideration? He looks at the insignia itself as the critical defining component of the ring. Reb Nechemya mitame shai Reb Nechemya omer b'tabas halacha chosma. When it comes to a ring, it's really the insignia which is giving it its defining characteristic. And if the insignia is made out of metal, we're now calling it a metal ring, despite the fact that the ring itself is wood, but the insignia is made up of metal, and so therefore the insignia and the ring now are considered metal, and therefore going to be mekabel tuma. And then it happens to be that Reb Nechemya is consistent with this position numerous times, that when I'm looking at any kind of instrument, and it's a composite of a little bit of wood and a little bit of metal, which part is going to be the defining part? So it's not going to be the base element of it, but it's going to be the one that is providing it its function and usage. And we're going to go through different examples. Ba'ol halach achar samonav. This is all the sheet of Reb Nechemya. As we continue now in this Mishnah, or it's a Braisa. Ba'ol halach achar samonav. When we're talking about a yoke, so we're talking about the pegs of the yoke, meaning the entire yoke could be made out of wood. But if the pegs that are inserted to connect the yoke to the animal, if that's made up of metal, so then this yoke is considered metal in nature, and therefore is mekabel tuma. Another example is kolav, halach achar masmerosav. When we're talking about some sort of display board that's put in front of a store. So it's a simple board, it's wide on the bottom, it's narrow towards the top. And now what the store owner did is he put metal pegs on it, nails, and he hung his wares on this board, on the nails. So even though the board itself is made out of wood, but since it has nails, and nails are metal, and they are providing the function for this board, so as a result of that, Reb Nechemya says that this board is now going to be mekabel tuma because of the nails. B'sulam halach achar shlivosav. when it comes to a ladder, the ladder is made out of wood, but the nails are holding the rungs in. So therefore, according to Rabbi Nechemia, the ladder now is mekabel tuma. But arse halach archa shalosav. When we're talking about a scale, so the scale is basically made out of wood, but there are metal chains holding each of the cups of the scale. So according to Rabbi Nechemia, the scale now is going to be mekabel tuma because it is the chains that are providing the function for this scale. So you see, in all of these circumstances for Rabbi Nechemia, even though the items here in question are effectively wood, but because the, and I'm going to say this both literally and figuratively, because the linchpin of all of these items are made out of metal, so therefore Rabbi Nechemia puts all these items in the category of metal, and therefore going to be mekabel tuma. Now the Chachamim in every one of these cases, that's how Rashi understands it, the Chachamim in every one of these cases says that you follow the mamid, you follow the base. The base of all of these items are what are going to define these items in terms of Tuma Tahara. So as far as the ring is concerned, we're looking specifically and strictly at the ring itself. If the ring is made out of wood, even though the insignia is made out of metal, it is a wood ring and not mekabel tuma. And I'll just follow through with all these other examples as Rashi here explains. I'm paraphrasing the Rashi. When it comes to the yoke is fundamentally made out of wood. Yes, it's being held together by metal, but the yoke is made out of wood, and so therefore the yoke is a wood item, not mekabel tuma. When it comes to the display board of the store owner, it's made out of wood, even though, yes, it has nails in it, but it's wood and not mekabel tuma. When it comes to the ladder is made out of wood. There are two wood poles holding the ladder, right, serving as the base for the ladder. So the ladder itself, even though metal nails are holding the rungs in place, the ladder is effectively wood. And the same thing is true with the scale. The scale is primarily made out of wood. The level going over the fulcrum is made out of wood, and so therefore the scale itself is going to be considered a wood item. This is all according to the Chachamim. So what do we see over here? Very simply, a machlokes between Rabbi Nechemia and the Chachamim in terms of how to establish the definition of a utensil, whether it's made out of metal or made out of wood. And now we have a very easy way to resolve. We're not resolving, but we have an easy way of explaining the machlokas between the Mishnah in Kalim and the Mishnah here in Shabbos. So when we're talking about a ring that's made out of wood with a metal insignia, so that means to say now that according to Rabbi Nechemia, it is metal and therefore going to be mekabel tuma. That's the Mishnah in Kalim, as opposed to our Mishnah over here that says that it's not a tachshit, so that would be according to the Shita of the Chacham. Rava is of the following opinion. Litzadim Kitani. Rava says, look, as far as our Mishnah is concerned, here's a simple way to read our Mishnah. And in doing so, sorry, not the Mishnah. I take it back. Rava is now rereading the Braisa. The Braisa, which obviously challenged our Mishnah. So Rava says, Litzadim Kitani, here's how you're going to read it. You're going to read it segments. Yeshalachosam Tachshit, the Ish, that when it has an insignia, it's going to be considered a Tachshit. We're talking about the ring worn by a man. A man's wearing a ring, but for a functional basis. Meaning the man's wearing a ring because he's going to be sealing envelopes and he's going to be sealing documents. And so therefore, for the man wearing the ring, it's going to be a Tachshit when it has an insignia on it. And if it doesn't have insignia, so then tachshit deisha. So then this is obviously more of a jewelry item, and that would be a tachshit if the woman would be the wearer of it. That's a simple way of breaking up the braisa. And so now there is no stir between our Mishnah and the braisa regarding kalim. And finally, the third answer of the Gemara, Rav Nachman Yitzchak Amar Tuma Ashabas Karamis. So Rav Nachman Yitzchak says, I don't even understand where the question gets off the ground. Meaning, what did you do? You pitted a Mishnah here in Shabbos against a Mishnah in Kalim. Now, the truth of the matter is, says Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak, there are two different areas of halacha, and they are guided by two different criteria. Tuma kli maisa amarachmana v'klihu. When it comes to tuma, what is the parameter, what is the definition of a kli? A kli is something which is a kli maisa. As long as it has functionality, it's going to be considered a kli. And as Rashi over here explains, the Rashi divrei maschil tuma shabbos karamis hadiktan v'tabas ben sheyesh ala lav areisha kai dekarei tachshit nashim. When the Mishnah was listing, when the Braisa was listing the various items that are, in fact, considered a kli, and it listed two different types of rings, a ring with an insignia and a ring without, the Mishnah wasn't, in Kalim, wasn't telling us that the ring with insignia is a tashit. It was telling us that it was a keli, and Rashi spells this out very clearly. If it has an insignia on it, it's not a tachshit, but miukli maisehu. But it's still a kli. It has usage and function. Now, if it doesn't have an insignia, okay, fine. But then it's a jewelry. Then it's an article of clothing. And that's also mekabel tuma. Good. So that's how the Mishnah in Kalim was not giving us definition of what is jewelry. The Mishnah in Kalim is giving us definition of what Kalim or Mekabel Tuma. And so by rings, so a ring with an insignia on it, with a seal on it, is in fact Mekabel Tuma. Why? Not because it's a Tachshit, simply because it's a Kli. Fine, but that doesn't affect our Mishnah over here when it comes to Shabbos. By Shabbos, what is a woman allowed to walk out with on Shabbos? Something which is a tachshit. And the Gemara makes this point very clearly. We're back to the Gemara. When it comes to Toma Kli Masu Amar Rechmanu V'Klihu, Shabbos Mishum Masui. When it comes to Shabbos, the issue is whether or not it is a burden. Amar Rechmanu Ein Alechosem Tachshit Yesh Alechosem Masui. And so if it does not have an insignia on it, so therefore it's just ornamental. And therefore it is a tachshit. With an insignia, so it is a masui, it's a burden. Wrapping up the first part of our morning, a steer between the Mishnah here in Shabbos and that in Kalim, in terms of a ring that has an insignia on it. Our Mishnah implies that it is a burden, and woman is forbidden from going out with it on Shabbos. And the Mishnah in Kalim gives us the impression that it is a ring, it's a tachshit. And we have three different ways to resolve the discrepancy. Rabbi Zera says it's a machlokes tanayim in terms of what gives a ring its definition. Is it the base of the ring or is it the insignia? Machlokes between the Tanakhama and Rabbi Nechemia. That's one way to resolve the discrepancy. It's not resolving, it's just simply explaining. A second way is Rava. Rava just simply rereads the Braisa and that a ring that has a chosam is a tachshit for a man. A ring that has a chosam is a tachshit for a man. A ring without a chosam is a tachshit for a woman. That's Rava's response. And finally, Reb Nachman Bar Yitzchak says that the question doesn't even get off the ground because each of the Mishnayos is based on a different criteria of definition. Mishnayos and Kalim are giving us the definition of a kli. The Mishnayos here in Shabbos is giving us the definition of a tachshit. Continuing now in the Gemara. V'lo b'machat she'ena nekuva. We're up to the needles and we're talking about a needle without an eye. And we said that a woman cannot go out with it on Shabbos. But we also said that if she does so, she will be patur. Meaning it is fundamentally an accessory item, but because of Gzeira D'Rabban, she cannot go out with it on Shabbos. So that means to say that it falls under the category of a tachshit. How can an eyeless needle be considered a tachshit? Gemara's question. Lamai Chazia. What usage does it have? I'm Rav Yosef Hovi Isha Ogeris Bas Se'aram. So Rav Yosef says what we could do with an eyeless needle, if some of the woman's hair now is coming out of her head covering, so she can tuck it in, wrap it in using the needle. The needle basically will serve like a bobby pin. So the Gemara says, Amalei Abaye v'tahavei kabiras tahara v'tishtarei. So Abaye says, well, if that's true, then she would be allowed to wear it on Shabbos. It would not even be an issur d'rabbanan. If the purpose of this eyeless needle is that it's helping her keep her hair tucked in under her head covering, so then, of course, she'd be allowed to go out with it on Shabbos. It's promoting her tznius, and she'd be going out with it on Shabbos. The Gemara says, it's no different than the example of Beerus. Beerus, as we're going to learn later in the Masechta, basically, it's a garter holding up her stockings. Now, even though it is not clothing, but it is holding up the socks, and it is enhancing her tznius. And that is something that a woman can go out with on Shabbos. So if that's true regarding the garter, so the same thing is true regarding the bobby pin. So the Gemara says, so it can't be that that's the definition or the usage of the needle, because then it would be mutter, legamri. Elatigrama Rav Ada, Narsha, Kameda Rav Yosef. So Rav Ada offers our second understanding of what the purpose, what the function of our eyeless needle is. Hovi Yisha Cholekes Bas Sa'ara B'Shabbos. What a woman does is that she parts her hair with it on Shabbos. L'mai chazya. So the Gemara says, okay, but you're not allowed, I'm going to read the Gemara like Rashi, but you're not allowed to part your hair on Shabbos. Meaning parting your hair on Shabbos is very similar to combing your hair on Shabbos, and one is not allowed to comb their hair on Shabbos. The reason why is because of the concern that hair may come out during the combing process. Now, Tosos is objecting a little bit to Rashi's Pshat because we learned earlier that this falls under the category of a Davish and a Meskavein. Okay, but I'll just stay over the Gemara like Rashi. So, but you're not allowed to comb your hair on Shabbos. Amarava, Tashal Zav, Yeshla, Arosha. So the Gemara says that this eyeless needle actually has two purposes to it. The needle portion itself is used to comb her hair, part her hair, and that she could do during the week. But on the other side of the needle, it has some sort of ornament on it. And on Shabbos, what she could do is she could just simply stick the needle into her, whatever head covering she's wearing, and basically it could be worn as some sort of decorative item that's on her head covering. And so therefore, it has the function of a tachshit. Okay, so, and now the conclusion is that it is a tachshit. In theory, a woman can go out with it on Shabbos. However, it's the kind of item that can easily be taken off, being shown to a friend. And so therefore, the chachamim were goes there that she cannot go out with it on Shabbos. Okay, so that is the discussion of the Gemara regarding the eyeless needle. And now let's continue. Lo yetzei, we're starting the Mishnah on Samach Amad Aleph. Lo yetzei ish b'sandal hamasumar. Now, as far as a man is concerned, what can a man not wear on Shabbos as a gzera d'rabbanan? So the first Mishnah went through the list of items that a woman cannot go out on Shabbos, even though they are tachshitin, but me gzera d'rabbanan, a woman cannot go out with these items on Shabbos. And now the Mishnah goes into discussion regarding what can a man not go out with on Shabbos, meaning that it is considered a tachshit. Nevertheless, the chachamim banned the wearing of these items. So number one, the sandal hamasumar, shoes with nails in them. Okay, if you and I could think about it in terms of our modern clothing, we're basically looking at shoes or sneakers with cleats. Now, we're going to discuss through the Gemara this morning why it is that the Chachamim banned the wearing of these cleats. Now, wearing one shoe. You cannot wear one shoe on Shabbos unless you have a wound on the other foot. If you have a wound on the other foot, so then everyone understands why you're wearing one shoe. But to wear one shoe on Shabbos would be prohibited. Why is wearing one shoe on Shabbos going to be prohibited? Rashi quotes the Gemara Yerushalmi. The Gemara Yerushalmi says that people will suspect that the other shoe is somewhere on your person, meaning you're carrying the other shoe. And even if you're not, but this would be a violation of Marasayim. Rashi himself prefers a pshat in which if you're wearing one shoe out in the Rosh Hasharabim and people start pointing to that one shoe, noting how asymmetrical it is and how weird it is that you're wearing one shoe, so you're going to be tempted to take it off now in order to try to reduce the embarrassment that you're currently suffering. And this finally gets back to now that Tosfos that we discussed time and again every day that we've gone through this perek, where Tosfos gives the third category of what the Chachamim were worried about, Kepeda. And here, at least according to Rashi, now we have an example of Kepeda. V'lo b'tfilin, one is not allowed to wear tefillin into Rosh Hasharabim on Shabbos. Tomorrow's daf, we're going to be discussing the tefillin extensively, what the issues are. V'lo b'kmeya, now wearing an amulet, b'zman she'eino min ha-mumcha. If that amulet is not written by an expert, you cannot wear this amulet on Shabbos. The clear implication is, an amulet that is written by an expert is going to be allowed to be worn on Shabbos. We'll talk much more of that in tomorrow's daf. V'lo b'siryon, v'lo b'kasta, v'lo b'magapayim. These are all different types of armor that is worn by the soldier. Anybody cannot wear these items on Shabbos. The imyatza ino chayv chatas. But if somebody were to wear any of the above items that we mentioned, so it is a malbush, it is clothing. One did not violate the Isser d'Araisa, but one violated the Isser d'Ravanan if one were to go out with any of the aforementioned items on Shabbos. In terms of what exactly these armor materials are, let's wait till the Gemara, because the Gemara is going to be discussing these items at length, giving definition to what all they are. That comes up on Samech Beis. The remainder of today's daf, we're going to be talking about Sandal Masumar. It's going to be rather interesting to see how much daf is dedicated to the shoes with nails on them. Obviously, it was a mode of dress that was very popular back in the day. You've heard me say this before, picture's worth 1,000 words, and over here, If you see a picture of it, that would obviously be very beneficial. In fact, last night, I texted my friend Dr. K, who has the Koran Gemara. I just wanted to see a picture of it. He sent me pictures of what of an old sandal hamasumar. Okay, and like I thought, it's basically a shoer sneaker with a set of cleats on them. And now the Gemara wants to know, why is it that the Chachamim banned them? So sandal hamasumar my time, why is it that it's banned? So the Gemara is going to tell us that this is Gzeira d'Rabbanan based on an episode, what seems to be a number of episodes, all speaking to the basic idea that under certain circumstances it could be very dangerous to wear sandal masumar, and people's lives could be taken if people in a congregated area are going to wear sandal masumar. The Gemara starts with a number of incidents. Amar Shmuel, shalfei ha'gzera hayu. Now the word shalfei, by the way, an interesting word. Rashi does not explain it over here, which is unusual. Rashi usually explains words that are strange. But anyway, shalfei gzera hayu vayu nechbaim ma'ara. So there was presumably a Roman decree. I mean, Shmuel's saying this, but I'm venturing a guess that it was during a Roman decree. And Jews had to hide in a cave. V'amru ha'nechnas yikanes. Now, in terms of seeking and securing a safe haven, so they invited anyone who wanted to come in. V'ayotze al yetze. However, no one is to leave, because if anyone were to leave, that would signal now the hiding spot, and all those Jews hiding in the cave would be at the risk of being killed. Nepach sandalosho echad mehem. Now, one of them was wearing the sandal hamasumar. Sandal hamasumar, it is difficult to tell which direction the person is walking. Apparently, the construction of the shoe does not really give evidence to whether the person is walking in one direction or another direction. And so, even though when you and I think about footprints, even by shoes, made by foot, by shoes, so it's pretty clear which direction you're walking, the shoe has a very clear shape. And I'm supposing that the sandal hamasumar did not have this very clear shape, and so therefore it was not totally clear whether the direction of the footprints were going one direction or another. Kitzvurim heim echad mehem, yatsa. So now, rumors started circulating within this cave that somebody left the cave. Varu oivim. And now panic ensued, and they thought that the enemies would spot them. V'akshav b'im aleihem. And they all feared for their lives. Dachu zeh b'zeh. The panic just grew and escalated. They started pushing one another. V'hargun zeh yosem imasha hargu b'im oivim. And Rachmanus, they ended up killing each other based on the panic and the dread, because apparently all of them were wearing the sandal hamasumar, and they just basically stabbed each other with the sandal hamasumar. That's one episode. The Gemara says a second. Rabbi Eli ben Elazar Amar b'Mara Yoshvin. They were in a cave. V'shamu kol me'al gabi hamara, and they heard voices above the cave. Interesting. Tosha says the sounds they heard was the sound of a sandal hamasumar, meaning somebody was walking above the cave, and the sandal hamasumar apparently makes a really loud sound. In other words, there are metal spikes on the bottom, and they heard the sandal hamasumar above the cave. Kisvurim ha'yushabahu aleihem oivim. And once again, panic ensued as people started saying, we were spotted, we were sighted by the enemies. Dachu zeh b'zeh v'hargu zeh zeh. They pushed one another, they killed one another. Yosem imasha hargu b'hem oivim. More than the enemies killed them. The Gemara gives us a third anecdote. Rami bar Cheska Amar b'beis ha'knesses ha'yu yoshvin. The event occurred in a shul. V'sham kol me'achori beis ha'knesses. And they heard a sound from behind the shul. Again, like we could say like Tosos, that the sound was being produced by the sandal hamasumar. Kisvurim ha'yu shabahu aleihem oivim. And once again, panic and rumors started circulating. The enemies found them. Dachu zeh b'zeh. They pushed one another. V'hargu zeh zeh. They killed one another. Yosem imasha hargu b'hem oivim. More than the enemies did. The Gemara just gave us three different reports, three different accounts. Now, it could be one of two possibilities. One is that it was one episode with just variation of what some of the details were regarding this one episode. Or the other possibility is they were three distinct episodes, all under Roman decree, and the three different times people killed each other. I lean a little bit towards that second possibility, as now we're looking at Gzeira d'Rabbanan, and it's not just based on one incident, but it's based on multiple incidents. Okay, but I'm not suggesting that I know which one is really the right way to learn it, but anyway. So from that point now going forward, the Chachamim made Gzeira, that one is not allowed to wear the sandal masumar on Shabbos. The Gemara asks some obvious follow-up questions. So the Gemara says, okay, So then there should be a general ban on wearing the sandal mesumer. Why is this ban, why is this gzera limited to Shabbos? So ma'isik yava b'Shabbos hava. So the Gemara says, but the incident occurred on Shabbos itself. B'yom tov lishtare. So the Gemara says, okay. So that means to say that if the incident happened on Shabbos and the gzera is on Shabbos, so then the gzera should be limited only to Shabbos. The gzera shouldn't apply in yantav, right? So the Gemara says, alama tanam. But meanwhile, we have a mission in Beitza. As we are now on the top of Samach HaMel Beis, and the mission of Beitza, we're going to skip the parentheses. Avalosanda mesumar v'lo mino sha'inu tafor. Things that you cannot send to your friends on yantav. One of them is the sandal mesumer. You can't wear the sandal mesumer. So don't send it to your friend on Yantif. That is the mission of Beitza. So the Gemara's response is, B'Shabbos my time of Deika Kinufa. So the Gemara says, okay, but the reason why the Gzera applies on Yantif is the following. On Shabbos, what was the concern? What was the issue? The issue was is that there was a large congregation. A lot of Jews assembled in one location. And that led to the unfortunate, to the tragic death of all these Jews. So b'yomtov nami ki kinufia. So the truth of the matter is the same thing's true on yomtov. On yomtov there is an isur malacha. People don't work, and people come to shul and congregate. And so therefore we have this issue when it comes to shuls as well. When it comes to yomtov as well. Tanit sibur ika kinufia. Litzer. So the Gemara says, okay, well we can say the same thing regarding tanit sibur. When there is a public fast day, so everyone congregates into the shuls, and so therefore, even on a Tanis Sibur, we should extend the Gzera. No one should be wearing the sandal mesumer on a fast day, on a public fast day. So the Gemara's response is, Maisa kihava bekinufya de isura. Hacha bekinufya de hetera hava. So the Gemara says, yeah, but a public fast day is not exactly the same. When it comes to Shabbos and Yontov, that is a congregation of people getting together on a day where there is Isra Malacha. When it comes to a Tanis Sibur, there is no Isra Malacha on a Tanis Sibur. V'afilu Rabbi Chanina ben Akiva. Now the Gemara notes that even according to the position of Rabbi Chanina ben Akiva, da'amar lo asu ela b'yardin v'sfino ma'iser shahaya. Now he says like this. Now this is based on a Gemara in Moed Katan. The Gemara over there describes a gzera de Rabbanan that was enacted that the para aduma, the meich, I'm sorry, let's say it better. The mechatas, the solution of the paraduma and the mayim chayim, cannot be transported on a boat over the Jordan River. Now, it sounds strange, but there was an episode, there was an incident once where there was mace discovered in the boat that was going over the Jordan River, and even though there was the mechatas on that boat, that now becomes tumah because of the mace that was contained underneath the boat, so at the bottom of the boat. And so as a result of that, so they banned transportation of the mechatas on a boat that goes over the Jordan River. Okay. The details not for now, but the point over here is as follows. Rabbi Chanina ben Akiva says that the gzera is limited only where you have a perfect match to the way it originally occurred. It has to be a boat, Jordan River. It has to replicate the incident itself. And so even Rabbi Chanina ben Akiva, who basically maintains that when the Chachamim make a gzera, the gzera is only limited to perfect replication, hanimili yardem deshani mishar naharas. That's because the Jordan River is so distinct than all other rivers. Aval yomtov v'shabbos ki adad inenu. But when it comes to yomtov and Shabbos, they are effectively the same. Ditnan, the Mishnah Megillah, ein ben yomtov v'shabbos el ochel nefesh bevad. The only difference between Shabbos and yomtov is ochel nefesh. But the Mishnah there is telling us that effectively, fundamentally, Shabbos and Yontov are one in the same. So even though the original event occurred on Shabbos, but to move over from Shabbos to Yontov is not a small, it's not a large leap. It's a tiny leap. It's really the same. So even Rabbi Chanina ben Akiva would be comfortable extending the gzera from Shabbos to Yontov. Okay. So far, in terms of the sandal mesumer, so what we've been discussing now is this idea that because of either one incident or multiple incidents that occurred and the death of Jews resulted from it, so the Chachamim banned the wearing of sandal mesumer on Shabbos and on Yontif. The Gemara now is going to be discussing. Now from here until the rest of the daf today, the Gemara is going to be going over many details regarding the sandal mesumer. And admittedly, to a community, to a society, who for now many, many years, centuries, have not been wearing the sandal mesumer, so all this to us is going to seem strange, as we're going to be discussing details of something which is just, we just don't see anymore. In fact, even the Even the Sifrei Halacha, the Tor, when describing the sandal Masumer, notes that these gzeiros don't apply anymore simply because we're not wearing the sandal Masumer anymore. So good. So we're going to go, obviously we're going to go through the Gemara. We're going to see the details in the Gemara. But admittedly, however, it's just going to be hard to process this. I imagine it's going to be a challenge to remember this, as the as these are details that just simply don't affect our daily lives. Am Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel Lo Shanu Ela Lechazek. The only time where the nails in the sandal Masumer are going to be under the Gzera de Rabbanan, if they're there to strengthen the shoe, enhance the connection between the sole to the shoe, to the upper. Avalanoi mutter, but if they're just for decorative purposes, then it would be mutter. The Kamalanoi, how many nails would define itself as being decorative? Rav Yochanan Amar Chamesh Bezev, Chamesh Bezev. So Rav Yochanan says 5 nails in one shoe, 5 nails in another shoe. Rabbi Chanina Amar Sheva Bezev, Sheva Bezev. 7 nails in one shoe, 7 nails in another shoe. Amalei Rav Yochanan, Rav Shem Bar Abba, Azbrach Lididi, Shtai Mikam Ba'achas, Bitarsi Yosav. And now Rav Shem Bar Abba says, I'll give some more detail. When we're describing 5, it's 2 on one side of the shoe, 2 on the other side of the shoe, and then 1 in the back to hold up the straps. L'Rabbi Chanina, Gimel Mikam Ba'achas, Bitarsi Yosav. And according to Rabbi Chanina, it's 3 on one side of the shoe, 3 on the other side of the shoe, and 1 in the back to hold in the straps. Makes for the Gemara challenges, Sandal Hanote Osalo Sheva Divrei Rabbi Nasan. If let's say the sandal is uneven, and now I want to create a more balanced shoe, so I can add nails in order to create balance. And according to Rabbi Nasan, you can add 7 nails. Rabbi allows the putting in of 13 nails. Now, Bishlam le Rabbi Chanina hu damar ka Rabbi Nasan. Now, Rabbi Chanina is clearly following the sheet of Rabbi Nasan, where allowance is given to put up to 7 nails in the shoe. Ela Rabbi Yochanan damar kaman, but Rabbi Yochanan says 5. Who's like Rabbi Yochanan going like? Meaning, Rabbi Yochanan is an Amora, he needs a Tana to support his position. So, hu damar ka Rabbi Nurai. So, he's holding like Rabbi Nurai, the Tanya we learned in a Braisa. Rabbi Nurai omer hey mutter v'sheva aser. He says that 5 nails would be mutter, 7 would be aser. Amar lo Ifa le Rabba Bar Bachana. Ifa asked the following question, or made the following statement to Rabba Bar Bachana. Asam tamidei Rabbi Yochanan, avidei k'Rabbi Yochanan. You who are students of Rabbi Yochanan, so you're given the allowance of 5 nails into the sandal mesumer. That's noi. Ana navi k'Rabbi Chanina. We, on the other hand, who are Rabbi's Rabbi Chanina, we're given the allowance to put in 7 nails into our sandal mesumer. Bamine Ravuna Mirav Ashi Chamesh Mahu. What about 5? Amalei afilu zayin. What do you mean, 5? You can put up to 7 nails. Afilu zayin mutter. Tes mai, what about 9? Amalei afilu ches aser. No, 7 is the maximum. 8 is going to already be aser. Vamine hahu ratzanam Rabbi Ami. The following shoemaker asked the following question for Rabbi Ami. Tafru bi bifnim mahu. What if, let's say, the nails go into the interior? And what you're doing is you're putting the sole into the, now we'll call it a shoe, not a sandal. So amalei mutter. So he says, well, if you're putting the nails in and you're attaching the sole into the interior of the shoe, that would be mutter. So v'lo yadam my time, and I didn't understand why. So I'm Rav Ashi, v'lo yadam my time, you don't know why, came into tafra mi bifnim havelei minnow. Well, once you're putting the nails inside, it no longer is a sandal, now it's a minnow. And we've seen this in halacha many times, the distinction between a sandal and a minnow, right? A minnow is something that you and I are more accustomed to wearing. It's a shoe. Sandal, like the English word, it's more like a sandal. So the gzera was only limited to a sandal, not to a minnow. And Rashi over here points out that, again, the gzera is only ke'in hama'ora. The gzera is going to be patterned after the incident. The incident occurred with sandals. And so therefore over here, the incident, the gzera itself, is only going to mimic the incident. And so therefore, if it's shoes, if it's by definition minnow, it does not fall under the gzera. Bisandu gazru bei rabbanan. We're back to the Gemara. The Gemara makes this point effectively. Bisandu gazru bei rabbanan. Bimino lo gazru bei rabbanan. Bamine Rabbi Abba bar Zavda me Rabbi Abba bar Avina asau kamin kavus mahu. Now, what if we shape the nails in an unconventional manner? So over here, the Gemara describes the nails being bent over, basically like a staple. And now, so it is. It does have the shoes on the bottom do have these, but they're not spikes now. They're basically a staple attached to the bottom of the shoe. Doesn't sound safe, and you step a little too hard, and those two ends are going right into your foot. But okay, obviously, they know much more about construction of shoes than I do. That's an understatement. So the Gemara says, so what if the nail is shaped in an unusual manner? Amalei mutter, so he says it would be mutter, would be permissible. And once again, we're going to say, Rashi says it, because it's no longer me'in hama'ora. once you deviate from the way that that the incident occurred, so it no longer falls under the gzerah. And the Gemara substantiates this, ratifies this with a statement by Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Chanina. Let's say the shoe has got like almost like a bed of nails underneath, and they serve to protect the shoe so that the ground doesn't eat the shoe up. So then it would be mutter. Tani kavasi de Rav Sheshes. We have a brisa supporting this position of Rav Sheshes. The brisa reads: Lo yetzayish b'sandal mesumar. A person cannot go out with a sandal mesumar. V'lo yital me b'ayis avayis. Not only is a gzera going to ban you going outside with a sandal mesumar, even if all I'm going to be doing is walking from one house to another, that's still banned activity. I feel me mita lamita. Even if I'm doing is going from one bedroom to another bedroom, from one bed to another, meaning you can't wear the sandal mesumar on Shabbos. Period. But what you can do is you can take it and put it on top of a kli. Meaning the sandal mesumar is not muksa. It has the status of being a keli. You just can't wear it on Shabbos. Continues the brisa, you can use it to support your bed, meaning it's not muksa. Rebbe Elazar bar Shimon oser. Now Rebbe Elazar Rebbe Shimon says that you cannot even move the shoe. In other words, Rebbe Elazar Rebbe Shimon says that the gzera extends to not only not wearing the shoe, but he extends it to not even moving the shoe as well. Nashu rov masmarosav nishtari bo dalarohei. If let's say most of the nails fall out of the shoe, and there's only remaining four or five nails, mutter. So then it would be permitted. Rebbe Matir al Sheva, Rebbe allows you to put up to seven nails. Or let's say it falls out. As long as there are seven nails remaining, so according to Rebbe, that would be mutter. Now, if you've been following the daf really well, so you'll notice the discrepancy where above, Rebbe talked about 13, and over here he says seven. So good. So that's a great find, and the Gemara is going to pick up on that. Chipal ba'or milamata v'kavalo masmeres milamala. If let's say you had a leather sole on the bottom and the nails went above it, mutter, under those circumstances it would be mutter. Now, right there, that gives us now, we'll come back to that. Asu kimin, that's the minnow, that's the shoe. Asu kimin kabos u kimin tas o kimin yaseid. If let's say the nails are not put in the conventional manner, the nails are put in kalvos, like we described earlier, they look like now like a staple. Or kimin tas, or they look rather, they were banged out. And they don't look like a pointy spiked nail. Okimin yaseid, or it looks more like a peg. Again, the nail now is fashioned in a way where it does not look like the conventional nail. It doesn't fall under the gzera. Oshi chipau kula b'mas meros. Here we go. Here's the part of the brisa which we really wanted. The whole reason why we quoted the brisa. And if the nail is, let's say, if the nail is all over the shoe, like a bed of nails. So kadesh lo te karko chaso, so that the ground doesn't eat up the shoe, mutter. Under those circumstances, it would be mutter. Hagufakashia. Now the Gemara says, okay. So the reason why we quote the Brisa is to support Rav Sheshes, mission accomplished. But now the Gemara notes we have a discrepancy. So Amart Nashurov Masmarosav Afagav Nishtaru Bei Tuva. We said that if many of the nails fall out, most of the nails fall out, even though many are remaining. Vahadatini Arba Chamesh in Tfei Lo. The Gemara says, on the other hand, it says that the only way that there's an allowance to wear the shoe is only if four or five nails are remaining, but no more. So the discrepancy is how many nails need to be remaining. The impression you get from the beginning of the brisa is as long as it's not the majority, but it could be many. Then the brisa says it could be no more than four or five. So Amar Rav Sheshes lo kasha kan shigamamo kan shenekro. So the Gemara says, well, it really depends on what happened to the other nails. If what happens to the other nails that they just got worn down, that's gamamo. Then it would be permitted. Rashi writes over here, Avrishumo Nikar, Besochaitz. It was worn down, but you could still see remnants of the original nails. Afilu Tuva, so then you can have many. Minkar She'enu Kabriyaso. Because you see over here that it wasn't like it originally was. However, nekru, if the other nails fell out totally, and now there's no indicator that there were other nails over there, and so now all I have is just the remaining nails with no indication that there were other nails there, so then it cannot be more than four or five. That's the Gemara's resolution of the competing implications of the brisa. Arbo chamish mutter. Now you have a shoe with a lot of nails, and then It falls out. If you have four or five, it would be mutter. Asher chamishari arba mibaye. If five is okay, certainly four would be okay. I'm rechista arba misandokato v'chamish misandokado. Small shoe, you can have maximum four nails. Bigger shoe, you can have five nails. Rabbi Matir ad sheva, v'atani Rabbi Matir shloshesrei. Now the Gemara notes the discrepancy between Rebbe and Rebbe. In a earlier brisa on this amud, Rebbe said you can have 13 nails. In this brisa, Rebbe said you can have upwards of seven nails. Which one is it? So the Gemara says, note shani. So the Gemara says, well, if you are just evening out the shoe, so that's different. And that gives you an allowance to put even more nails. So if the shoe is clearly uneven, and you are just putting it into level off, so the so then under those circumstances, you could put more than seven, upwards of 13. So the Gemara says, okay, now that we gave this answer, we could use this answer to answer a previous question. We noted earlier in the Gemara that Rav Yochanan, who is he going like? And of the two opinions in the Braisa, Rabbi Nassan and Rabbi, that was earlier in the Gemara, above in our Amud. So the Gemara's question was, who's Rav Yochanan going like? And what the Gemara had to do is the Gemara had to bring out another Braisa. But the Gemara says, well, you know what? We didn't have to do that. Because we should just simply say that the Braisa is fundamentally different as the Braisa is describing where the shoe is uneven. And when the shoe is uneven, so there's a greater allowance to put in more nails. As if we have not yet done enough details regarding the Sandal Masumar, just a little bit more. Amar Rav Masna, Amar La, Amar Rav Achdebuy, Bar Masna, Amar Rav Masna, Ein Alacha Kerav Lazeb Rebbe Shimon. In the Braisa that we just quoted, where Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon says that you can't even move the sandal ha-mesumar. So the Gemara now notes that that's not the halacha. You are allowed to move the sandal ha-mesumar. Pshita. The Gemara says, isn't that obvious? Yachad v'rabim, halacha k'rabim. Look at the Braisa. The Braisa first brings in the opinion of the Tanakhama that you are allowed to move it. The Tanakhama is a das ha-rabim. That's the majority viewpoint. And then the Braisa brings in the opinion of Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon. So the Gemara says, so don't I normally say that when I have a dispute between Yachid v'Rabim, the halacha falls like the Rabim, meaning what did we just learn together? Apparently nothing new. So the Gemara says, no, ma'ud detema misaber taimed the Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon, baha, kamash malan. I might have thought that that Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon is saying a wonderful svara, that included in the gzeira of sandal mesumar is the fact that you're not allowed to move it, because once you start moving it, you may end up coming to wear it. So the Gemara says, as a result of that, that's what I would have thought. And even though he's a yachid, but he has a point. So kamash malan. So the Gemara just simply wants to hammer home the idea that in this case we do not paskin like Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon. Am Rabbi Chia ilab dekaru le bavlai shara isure. So Rabbi Chia says, I am a little bit worried about my reputation. I'm concerned that they're going to describe me as the Babylonian who permits isurim. Okay, so apparently Rabbi Chia was a little bit more of a mako. And he had a tendency to give out kulas. And he says, look, had I not been worried about their reputation, Sharon and Beituva, I'd be much more makel than any of the opinions that we had earlier. Vikama, now, how many nails was he ready to allow within the sandal before you get to the Xera de Rabban of Sandal Masumar? Bipumbadisa Amrin Esrin Varaba, and Pumbadisa, they recorded him as saying up to 24 nails. Bisura Amrin Esrin Matarte. In Surah, they said up to 22 nails. Amar Rav Nachman Yitzchak v'Simancha, and Rav Nachman Yitzchak says as a mnemonic to help you remember. Ad Azbi Pumbadisa Lesura Chaser Tarte. When I walk from Pumbadisa to Surah, it was such a long walk. I lost two nails along the way, and so that helps you remember that the different accounts of how many nails are allowed in the sandal Hamisumar according to Rabbi Chia. Ad Kan. This is going to be the point where we conclude tomorrow. We move on to the next point of the Mishnah, the wearing of one shoe on Shabbos, which is also a banned activity. We'll discuss more of that on Shabbos. Let's recap today. Three basic discussions that we had in the course of today's Gemara. Number one, rings with a signet. Is that considered a tachshit or a masui? So a differing viewpoints based on the Mishnah here in Shabbos, which says that it is not a tachshit, but rather a masui. And the Mishnah and Kalim that says that it is a kli. And how do I resolve the discrepancy between the Mishnah and Shabbos and the Mishnah and Kalim? And the Gemara gave us three ways to do so. Rabbi Zeira, Rava, Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak. The Gemara then went through the eyeless needle. What would exactly be the benefit, the function of an eyeless needle? Now you can't go out with it on Shabbos, but at the same time we did, however, say that it is a tachshit. How is it a tachshit? What service does it have? The Gemara gave two suggestions, one of Rav Yosef and the other one of Rav Ada Nershah. The Mishnah then introduced us to that was the second topic, and the Mishnah introduced us to the clothing that a man cannot go out with on Shabbos. The first item, article of clothing that we described in the Mishnah is sandal hamasumar, and then for the rest of today's daf, an amud and a half, the Gemara told us the following of this third topic of sandal hamasumar. One, the genesis of this gzera, why the Chachamim made a gzera, that you can't wear these cleats on Shabbos. The Gemara then went through many details where if the nails that are put in are for the purposes of lechazek, to strengthen the shoe, so that falls under the gzera. However, if it's noy, if it's only decorative, then it would be mutter. And a really lengthy discussion in the Gemara in terms of how many nails are we talking about where it is noy, where it is decorative, and it's not lechazek. And many shitas amongst the Amoraim, amongst the Tanaim. And this and there are a couple of other exceptions and exclusions within the sandal hamasumar as we learned together. If it's a minnow versus a sandal, if it is a bed of nails as opposed to just nails that are dispersed amongst the bottom of the shoe, of the sandal, etc., etc. Adkan, we pick it up tomorrow morning.